Rigging. Information at its peak. This is 99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm listening.
This is Jay's baby.
Hey now, it's that incredible kick from J-Town. You better not sound, baby, you know how I put it down. Hey, lady, you must, that's my sugar cane, baby. The way you dance in my, you enslave me. You my fly, you my throw and space it. I'm gonna take you home tonight. Can't you see I'm alone tonight? Love Jones tonight. You and I, we own the night. And you live on my jam. Ain't never heard my type of jam.
Good morning, Lagos. This is Dr. Wiba Boer on Power Solutions on Nigeria Info 99.3 FM. It's good to be back after all the break from elections. Apparently nobody was interested in hearing about Power Solutions when the elections were on, so we had to go off for a couple of weeks, but it's good to be back. Today we have a special guest, Alistair Smith, from PowerGen. He's going to talk to us about his journey from the U.S. to Kenya to Nigeria, and the work that his company is doing to try and address Africa and then also Nigeria's power gap. So Alistair, thank you for coming on today.
Thanks, Weba.
All right. So Alistair, let's jump right in. You're American and British. The British side, what football team do you support?
I'm a Manchester United fan.
We should stop this interview right now. All right. Well, we'll let that one slide. Okay. That's okay. What about in the U.S.? What's your favorite team in the U.S.?
I'm a New England Patriots fan.
Okay. So good year.
Yeah, exactly.
Very
great,
good year.
Great year, Super Bowl champions.
Right. Fantastic. Okay. So Alistair grew up in New Jersey, then went to Harvard. What then brought you to East Africa? What happened?
So at Harvard, I got really interested in energy while I was studying.
Just to be clear, Harvard is a small university in Boston in the U.S., not to be confused with that great university in Connecticut nearby.
Yeah.
So, okay.
We would be a Yale graduate.
Exactly. Okay.
So at Harvard, I studied mechanical engineering, and I think it was my junior year, I took a fluid dynamics course, and that's really when I started looking at wind energy.
Okay.
And then from that, I did my senior thesis on building a portable wind turbine. And from that point on, I became very interested in alternative energy and ways that it could be deployed in areas across the world, not only in a U.S. context, but also in context in South America and Africa and all over the world. My first draw to why I ended up in Kenya was one of my roommates at Harvard, who also studied engineering, had gotten a travel fellowship to go across Africa for a year. And he spent 6 months in Sierra Leone, then came over to East Africa, traveled between Tanzania, Kenya, Rwanda, and ended up living with a family in Western Kenya, where he really saw the need for electricity in a rural context, and that there weren't really very many options for people other than diesel generators for them to have access to power. So he started looking at solar solutions and how to help provide solar support from a financial perspective, because they didn't have any means to really pay for these things. And this was before solar home systems. This was back in 2010. And when he came back after his trip.
So that was, he was still a Harvard student at the time?
No, he had finished school.
Okay.
And, I was still a Harvard student at the time. And he came over and we were spending some time together and he said, hey, you should really look at going to Africa and building wind turbines, from your experience with your thesis, because everybody needs power and not a whole lot of people are doing anything about it.
Right.
And so, at the time I was just working in the Harvard engineering labs and wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do. So I thought I might as well, you know, try it and travel a little bit. After spending a couple of months in Kenya, I realized I could build a wind turbine, a small wind turbine locally, with only needing to import magnets.
Okay.
And everything else I could source in Kenya. And I could build it for about 50% of the cost of an imported wind turbine of the same size. So I basically started building and selling wind turbines with my former roommate. That's really how our company, PowerGen Renewable Energy, got started. Is we were a wind turbine manufacturing company.
So it wasn't solar?
Wasn't solar originally.
Okay.
We started building these turbines and started trying to sell them to people. And we were, anybody that was interested in power solutions, we would design and develop a system for them.
And what size... How much power could
they generate? So we really only fabricated two different sizes of wind turbines, and they're very small for these rural contexts. So there was a 200 watt, which was about a 5 foot diameter turbine, and then a 1 kilowatt, which is about a 10 diameter wind turbine. And we saw that, all of the systems that we installed were also hybrid, though. So we did do solar, we did install solar systems adjacent with the wind turbines. And I think we got a lot of experience on that in terms of marketing and figuring out who would buy. Our typical clients were, people in wealthy areas, in rural wealthy areas. Schools and health clinics that had NGO and grant financing, but we were basically trying to sell to anybody that would be interested in reliable power.
Okay.
So we went from there and started to grow the business.
And was there a good regulatory environment at the time in Kenya for that, or was it sort of growing and developing as you were building your market?
Well, from a regulatory perspective, we were really focused at the early stages on private consumers.
So it didn't,
didn't matter that much, and it's something that's grown and developed over the years, and I think which has been fantastic. I think our main transition from wind to really just doing solar was in 2011. The prices in solar dropped dramatically.
Okay.
And so the cost parity between the two different generation sources skewed much more in favor for solar being more economical when it
even though you had to basically import all of that rather than
And I think that that's when you're looking at the levelized cost of energy and what's the easiest thing. I mean, one of the issues that you have with renewable sources is you are reliant upon when the wind is there and when the sun is there. And so that's why we also believed in having hybrid systems with both of those so that you would have a diversification of generation sources. But with the wind prices dropping, we started to trend more towards solar projects. We kept doing wind. I think the last small wind turbine that we manufactured was in 2014.
Okay.
And it was in 2013 where we started looking more seriously at mini grids and rural electrification. With the work that we'd been doing was primarily as a contractor work and finding...
And people were just paying you for the system. You didn't
exactly.
Install it. Okay.
And... You know, we weren't at the stage where we were getting financing for any of the projects. We were just being able to build these projects and sell them to people for people who had money to pay for them.
Right. And these early systems, though, with the wind turbines, are some of them still working?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I think the design that we used for these wind turbines is a very sort of rugged design that's really meant to survive in the elements. And we've developed partnerships with other companies that have really supported in continuing to manage those projects.
Okay. But and could wind work in Nigeria?
I think it could. I think it all, as we've looked at it, all depends on the wind regime and what is available in various areas. And also the size and scale. So when we look at projects now, we're willing to do any type of project and we base things off of the client. But for wind projects of any for a larger size, mm-hmm. it's all about doing surveys and right. having enough data so that you can understand what the economics are, and is that going to be a cost-effective way to generate electricity.
Right. And have you done any of that in Nigeria for wind in particular, or you're only looking at solar?
I think we, at this point, we are focusing on solar.
Okay.
I think that we've looked broadly at the available wind resources, specifically on different coasts and, mm-hmm. And areas that we see, you know, it might be a good way to diversify mm-hmm. The generation sources, but it's not something that we've done a huge amount of costing. And
okay.
But we have talked to a number of different clients that have said they're interested in wind. But then the next step is doing a full evaluation of the location and, right. and understanding the resources.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, let's go back to Kenya. So you okay. said 2014, you are now moving on from wind to more solar, and then now you were looking at mini grids, which now kind of takes you to a whole different ball game because now it's certain regulation has to be in place and so on. So was Kenya ready at that time?
They weren't.
Okay.
I think we had conversations with the regulatory authorities in Kenya so that they knew what we were doing, mm-hmm. but we didn't really fit into the framework that had been established in the country at the time.
Okay.
So it was about, it was just having a handshake agreement mm-hmm. with them on that because they wanted us to do what we were doing,
right.
which was providing rural villages with electricity. But at the same time, we didn't really fit into their whole structure.
Right.
Now, that's evolved since then. But at that time, we were seeing, okay, hey, we've built a great team here that can install renewable energy projects. Unfortunately, it's all based off of the fact that people need to have money in order to pay for these things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we looked at other ways that we could be influencing and have a greater impact and provide power to more people. And mm-hmm. that's when we started to think about mini grids and about acting more as a utility provider
right.
rather than just trying to sell one-off projects.
Right.
So the first projects we actually did in Kenya were crowdsourced.
Okay.
So we
locally or internationally?
Internationally.
Okay.
So it was a company called Kiva.
Right.
That we worked with. And we were able to get loans from them to build our first grids mm-hmm. in Kenya. That as well as working with other companies on building, mini grids is really where our first experiences started.
Right. And so how many mini grids do you now have operating in Kenya?
Well, so we have a number of different types of mini grids.
Okay.
There's the rural mini grids versus, what we call grid connected mini grids.
Okay.
Total mini grids, we have about 115 grids installed.
Okay. And those are ones that you operate or some of those are projects?
So those are ones we probably operate around 90 grids.
Okay.
But we've built around 115 over the lifespan of the company.
Okay. And so give me a sense of, you know, the kind, cause I know you're powering a tea farm, for example, a tea plantation. Mm-hmm. And then I guess you're doing some rural communities and so on. Just give me a sense of the kinds of people that you're serving,
yep.
and then what impact it's had on their daily lives.
Mm-hmm. I think the people. So we have different contexts mm-hmm. with the tea plantation. We don't look at that as "quote unquote" in the wild because you're right. in a much more controlled environment.
But it's all solar, right? The tea plantation.
Well, so no, the tea plantation, we have multiple different scenarios. Okay. Some we're extending the grid
okay.
that is an existing infrastructure, and the tea plantation has a bunch of hydro projects. They also are connected to the grid.
Okay.
But then we also have some islanded projects, which are purely solar projects that we've installed, mm-hmm. Where it wasn't economic to really run power to that location.
Right. Okay.
And then we're also doing another tea plantation where it's solely just, solar projects.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are there, aren't the wealthiest people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of working with the organization and being able to provide people with this electricity.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest impacts that we have seen, are around safety
mm-hmm.
and education. It just enables children to be able to work in the evenings more, when it comes to studies. And with safety, because we're putting in community lighting and street lights in these villages, that there is an increased sense of safety. And so people are very happy about that. So that's where we see like the greatest impact in that situation.
Okay. But not, I mean, I guess it must impact also their economic, you know, if they're running a shop, maybe they can keep it open longer. Are you seeing some of that also?
Well, in the wild context, as I brought up before, I think those are where we feel like we do have the greatest impact is with businesses, mm-hmm. is that they're able to stay open later and they're able to consistently show the big football game in the evenings. They can play music, mm-hmm. they can have cold drinks. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we've seen in some of the studies that we've done is that there is a large increase in revenue that's generated by businesses in communities that we've been able to put in our systems.
Right. And then I assume in Kenya they're paying with M-Pesa?
They are.
Okay, which is obviously something we don't yet have here.
No.
Which makes it a bit difficult. But so let's transition now to Nigeria.
Okay.
So I know I met you in Kenya, I think that was last year, probably about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are starting to think about coming to Nigeria.
Yep.
I know you personally had visited Nigeria because a cousin of yours married a Nigerian, correct?
Correct.
So you raised your hand and said, okay, I'm going to go to Nigeria. Was that the reason? Because you came, you visited, and you liked it, or?
Yeah, no, I've been, I think the first time I came to Nigeria was back in 2013.
Okay.
For my basically extended family's wedding.
Okay.
And
so you're Nigerian by marriage now?
By marriage, yes,
yeah,
of
okay,
course.
Good. All right.
And so I think I've been able to develop some and cultivate some relationships here, which really put me in a position where I'd be excited to come, and I already have a backbone of mm-hmm. infrastructure with people that I know that could support mm-hmm. in expanding here.
Right.
I think okay. when we were looking at Nigeria, it's with our expansions, we always look at three main factors, and is the market there, mm-hmm. is the regulatory environment good enough, and then is there enough capital to help mm-hmm. support with the growth in these communities? Because that's one of the necessary components, is that putting in these systems can be extremely expensive.
Right. And so Nigeria checks all those boxes?
And it does. I think that there's been some great developments in the last few years with the REA and what they've been able to do in setting up the right regulatory frameworks. And I think that there's a lot of money that is being devoted to the sector.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have national banks also focusing a lot around that as well. And so right now there's a lot of great momentum in Nigeria. And I think honestly, my only regret is that we didn't come sooner.
Right.
You know, but it's been going great so far. I think we see tremendous opportunity here.
Yeah. So, and I know there's a lot of companies that come to Africa. They start in Kenya. And then Kenya is really comfortable and they forget about us here in West Africa.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that you guys took the jump and are over here. So now, maybe you can talk to the audience. What stage are you at now in Nigeria? What are you looking for? What are you guys working on here?
Mm-hmm.
And when are people going to start seeing lights on because of power gen?
So, we're still getting our footing, so to speak. I think we first, our office and our company started up in November of last year.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping to be putting in our first project, in the next 2 months.
Okay.
And
are you able to say where it is, or that's still confidential?
I think we're looking in the Niger state right now.
Okay.
I think we're still finalizing all of the details. There are a number of things that we're doing though right now to evaluate different locations. Mm-hmm. So we are doing surveys across the country. We've visited 150 plus villages so far.
Okay.
And I think part of what we are looking for is what are good communities that we can provide power to. And I think for us, it's we want to focus on affluent communities that currently don't have power that could really benefit from the provision of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
What ends up happening with these types of systems is we look for the more affluent communities first, mm-hmm. and then what happens if we can prove the model and that the economics make a lot of sense, then we can go to other communities that might not have as much, mm-hmm. And be able to provide them with power as well. Mm-hmm.
But you're still focusing on rural areas.
Correct. I think we're also looking at potential ways that we could work with distribution companies.
Okay.
I think that I've had conversations with a number of companies, and they seem very open to figuring out ways that we can partner together, because I do think that there's situations where we can work with them and help provide people with more reliable electricity in urban context, but also in rural context where discos might have come but haven't actually provided power in either months or years.
Right. And then, so how would that model work? So you would use their infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
and then, but you would still meter the households and collect and so on?
Correct.
Okay, and then what would your relationship with the disco be?
I think we need to have further discussions around that. I think that there's a number of different ways that we could structure it, and it's making sure that the disco is getting something for it and is amenable to any sort of setup and situation. Mm-hmm. Now, that could be seen as a way leave situation where they're earning a certain amount from the revenue generated, or it could be set up as a leasing agreement where we're leasing their existing assets,
okay.
or it could be a purchase of those assets.
Okay.
It's something that we look forward to having further discussions with them and really seeing ways that it can be a win-win situation for both our company and their company.
Right.
And I think just one thing to clarify, though, with a lot of these systems and businesses that and mini-grids that we're setting up, these are not generating huge amounts of money where we're making lots and lots of money on these systems. Mm-hmm. I think that can be a common misconception as to why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason why we set a tariff as what it is really to be economic.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the cost of putting in these systems, it's about recouping those costs, and not necessarily to make enormous profits off of the business. It's something that we think what we do is very impactful, and there's definitely a social aspect of what we're doing in helping provide electricity, because we know how much it can change people's lives.
Right. So you're coming at it from, I think, the right perspective. It's the social impact is so massive on everyday life, but then also if you can do it in a way that's generating revenue so it's self-sustaining, then everyone wins.
Exactly. And that's what we think is the best model for developing these projects.
Yeah. So Zainab, can we go to the phones? Can you put out the numbers for everybody?
Call us on 01-277-0993, 01-277-1993, 01-277-2993, and 01-277-3993. This is Nigeria Info. We are listening.
All right. So if you have a question for Alistair, please call in. We'll be waiting, but in the meantime, we'll continue our conversation. So, Alistair, so you talked about that you've looked at 150 communities around Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So what's you talked about the three things that make you choose a particular country, but what makes you pick a particular community? This is so that listeners can know if you want your community to get a mini grid, how do you get it ready?
I think for us is we're investigating lots of different areas and regions in Nigeria. I think we've got a call.
Do we have a call? Okay. Oh, the call. We lost the call. Okay. All right. So you have to fix the telecoms next.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. I think we're trying to learn more. I think we try and take a very humble approach. We're in the process of hiring a number of Nigerians to help us with the growth and understanding of the market even more. We've looked at a number of different locations and geographies. So up in the north, in the south, and we know that there's different demographics in each location. There's different solar resources in each location.
Oh, we have a call. All right. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. Please, I want to ask, can that solar system carry something like iron, pressing iron?
Yep. Yeah. If for ironing, yes, the solar system can carry.
Like a laundry business.
It can. I think.
Okay, go ahead. He'll be listening.
So when it comes to iron boxes, they obviously have a large draw on them. So they're around 700 to 800 watts. Okay. With the systems that we're looking at here in Nigeria are of significant size. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that we know that, he would be able to use an iron box on our system. Okay. Now, obviously iron boxes can be expensive because they use 800 watts at an instantaneous rate.
Right.
Because you're normally ironing for 15 to 30 minutes, or less, it's not a huge, cost effect to it.
Okay. Over time.
Yep.
Do you have another call? Oh, no, not yet. Okay. All right. So I hope his question was answered. So you were talking about selecting communities.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, so I think with the communities, it's also about the demand mm-hmm. and the population density. So when we're looking at good communities, it's about the amount of connections we can have in a small area and understanding what they're currently consuming or what their potential is for consumption. Mm-hmm. We obviously want to be generating as much power and selling as much power as we can in these communities. So when it comes to iron boxes, when it comes to people with TVs or refrigerators mm-hmm. Or existing diesel generators that would like to replace that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have another call. All right, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Yes, what's your name?
My name is Uluwa Femi.
All right, Femi, go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, I want to ask, does the government policy affect your business?
Is government policy affecting their business?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think as I mentioned before, the Rural Electrification Authority has worked on a number of different regulations, and I also NERC mm-hmm. Has also changed the mini grid policy so as to enable stakeholders such as PowerGen and a number of other companies in Nigeria to be able to develop these systems, and I think that there's been a lot of support from the government to develop these systems here.
Okay.
So that's been, I think, a great positive because it's not something that we really see across Africa in the mm-hmm. regulatory environment. Mm-hmm.
So in that case, the government's role actually was to help bring you here.
Correct.
Helped make the decision.
Okay. And I think that the work that REA and Dami Lola has really been doing in developing the sector has really shown mm-hmm. through as it relates to reasons why we're here, reasons why there is so much excitement about the space.
We have another call. Oh, it dropped also? Oh, telecoms. Okay. All right. So, Alistair, we're almost out of time. So just a final thing. You know, you've talked about the government has supported you. You've talked about what you're looking for. What are we going to see in 3 years? How many communities will PowerGen have lit up across Nigeria?
I think some of the targets for us is around connections. So we don't necessarily look at things on individual villages because mm-hmm. villages can vary in size. I know that in the next 3 years, we have goals of being able to connect around 25 to 50,000 people here in Nigeria.
We're going to take one final call. Okay, Zainab is going to let us do one final call. All right, go ahead. What's your name? Give us a very quick, what's your question very quickly?
Hi, my name is Emmanuel.
All right.
I'm based in Lagos here, and I'm interested in PowerGen. Would that help residential housing? What would the cost be like? And would it even take air conditions in the house, like two or three air conditions in the house? And what is the cost implication if I wanted to have one installed for me?
Okay. Go ahead, Alistair.
So when we're evaluating renewable energy as a solution, you obviously always need to compare the costs of renewable energy to the other available sources. So if you're comparing it to the grid costs, the cost per kilowatt hour for solar projects will be higher than for that, but it is cheaper than diesel.
Right. And
maybe just let the audience know your website so people can reach out to you if they need a follow-up.
Yep. So our website is powergen-re.com. You can find out more information about what we do, and there's contact email addresses on the site.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Alistair. Our time is gone, unfortunately, but thank you very much. We're very happy that your journey took you from Harvard, well, from New Jersey to Harvard to Kenya, and now you're in Nigeria.
Thanks.
So glad that you're here, and we look forward to working with you to address Nigeria's major power gap, and that people will be seeing lights on and lives improved in a very short time. So time is up. We have to go. So Lagos, thank you. It's been a great show. I'm supposed to give you my Twitter handle. It's WIBAB_Africa. That's WIBA, WIEBE, and then capital B for my last name. So WIBAB_Africa. That's my Twitter handle. If you have any questions, you can follow up with me directly. I look forward to speaking to you all again in 2 weeks. We'll take another break next week for the governor's elections, and then we'll be back normally after that. So have a great week, Lagos. Thank you.
We are 99.3 Nigeria Info, the talk station of the nation. Let's talk.
99.3 Nigeria Info. We'll be right back.
It is the 2019 general elections live on your number one talk news and sports station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Join us live from our studios and relish blow-by-blow accounts, the incisive analysis, live reports, and voting updates, INEC guidelines, candidate participation, and all you need to know. On Saturday and Sunday from 7 a.m. to midnight, we'll bring you up to speed and ensure your dad is locked in. Nigeria Decides 2019 on Saturday and Sunday, 7 a.m. to midnight. It is live on your number one talk news and sports station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Join us.
Are you ready?
From executive producer Jennifer Lopez.
It's the biggest dance competition in the world.
We are going to be seeing the best dancers in the world, the top of the line, the elite.
It's a ride from beginning to end.
The winner of the show gets $1 million.
You're welcome.
I started as a dancer, and if you want to win that $1 million, the audience has to feel something.
One of the greatest things about dance is that it's a medium of art that's fun. It gives you a feeling. It lights you up.
I feel like the world is going to love this show because you don't really have to know much about dance to get into it.
It doesn't matter where you're from or how old you are, because if you have the passion, if you have the talent, only one thing matters. Are you the best in the world?
World of Dance Nigeria. It's our time. Get ready.
Nigeria Info.
On this side of the table, the conversation never stops. Join the discussion on the Midday Dialogue, 10 a.m. to 12 noon on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
99.3
Nigeria Info, your number one talk, news, and sports station in the nation. Yes, sir. Only 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Nigeria Info.
We start you off in the morning, keep you all day.
All day.
And keep you company.
Company.
All night long.
All night long.
We are 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Nigeria Info.
The first talk station of the nation.
Young the Dollar Entertainment.
Oh, shorty, lay a me, oh, shorty.
Keep the world covered for you.
99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm listening. You should be too.
Good, good, good morning. Good, good, good day. Good, good, happy feeling. Blowing, 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 blowing my way.
It is said that radio is the theater of the mind. The early history of radio emerged from streams of technology that produced and used radio instruments and radio waves. Within the timeline of radio, many people contributed theory and inventions into what became radio. Radio development began as wireless telegraphy, the first forms of long-distance communication mediums, later increasingly involving elements of broadcasting. The wireless telegraphy in 1837 and even the telephone in 1876 used wires to transmit noise from sender to receiver. They both obviously used vast networks of wires to send information. In the years leading up to the 20th century, inventors around the world were churning out new and exciting innovations, and scientific work in radio technology was also heating up too. Two men, particularly Serbian-American scientists Nikola Tesla and Italian physicists Guglielmo Marconi, went head-to-head in what would become the race to invent the radio. But more than 100 years later, ask any two persons who invented the radio, and you are likely to get two different answers. The radio invention story seemed a murky one that mixes scientific discovery with lawsuits and good old-fashioned marketing. Experimental radio broadcasting began in 1910 when Lee D. Forrest produced a program from the Metropolitan Opera House in New York. Other experimental radio stations were started in 1915 and 1916. Invented in 1933 by American engineer Edwin Armstrong, wideband radio was used to provide high fidelity sound over broadcast radio. Radios from the early 1920s operated on batteries. Around 1928, electric radios became available as a result of the development of the indirect heated cathode vacuum tube from RCA. In the 1930s, the golden age of radios saw the development of most of the circuit technology used today. Following on its heels, the shapes and the sizes of radios began to evolve, leading to integrated record players, built-in antennas, shortwave bands, accentuated by the war in Europe, and eventually the portable, small and cheap personal radios. Nigeria was introduced to radio broadcasting in 1933 with the presentation of the first radio distribution system, RDS, in the country. Being a British colony at the time, the radio distribution system was transmitting signals from the British Broadcasting Corporation to Lagos State. It took 6 years to increase the number of receivers to approximately 2,000. The number of RDS receivers reached about 1,000 people in 1939 and grew to 74,000 by 1960. Eventually, the first radio station was established in Ibadan in 1939, and in 1944 another radio station sprung up in Kano. Moving from direct current to battery-powered radio cemented the beginning of radio as a medium for the masses. Enthusiasts had already been finding creative ways to integrate radio into their cars for over a decade, but the first true car radios were not introduced until the 1930s, signaling one of the major breakthroughs in the evolution of radio. Call it a popular hobby or some obsession if you will, traveling long distances while listening to radio and changing stations along the way. Radio on the go, you'd call it. So, why weren't there laws enabling your smartphone to relay radio signals back then when they emerged? Turned out that on many phones, despite having the radio built in, companies disabled them or simply neglected to enable them, meaning that while the hardware was technically there to let you listen to the radio, you could not actually take advantage of it. Today, smartphone users are glued to their favorite content and station, while also on the go. Your number one talk, news and sports station, Nigeria Info, took a giant step a couple of years back, delving into the exciting realm of visual radio. Streaming live a good number of our programs, no doubt, has not been without expected challenges, but the results have been well worth it, given the number of our ardent listeners who now conveniently watch online. Radio today is the mass medium reaching the widest audience in the world. Little wonder the United Nations Educational and Scientific Organization, UNESCO, designated February 13 as World Radio Day to celebrate its strength in the fields of socio-economic development. A day to celebrate radio broadcasters and radio listeners around the world. A day to acknowledge the usefulness of radio as a tool of communication and information exchange.
Not everyone can afford a TV set and not everyone can do this DSTV subscription, but radio is always free on air and you can easily have access to information. It makes information more accessible to so many people without a class barrier.
The radio is just a thing which tells other stories and give other information without seeing the person who is talking, but you can still listen to what you're saying.
Radio provides the diversity of views and voices needed to address the challenges we all face, raising awareness among listeners and inspiring understanding for fresh new perspectives in paving the way for positive actions.
The competition in radio is now becoming jam-packed with a lot of so many radio FM. I sometimes have to decide through many stations to finally get the one I want to listen to. So I think it's quite cool, especially for those in the rural area, like I don't have access to TV and the rest.
Radio informs, transforms and unites us. Most specifically, radio is the perfect medium to counter the appeals for violence and the spread of conflicts, especially in regions or countries potentially more exposed to such realities. According to Herman Hesse, when you listen to radio, you are a witness of the everlasting war between idea and appearance, between time and eternity, between human and the divine. It really is about helping people change their lives, one day at a time.
Said it.
We heard it.
We captured it.
Packaged it
nicely.
Then put it on air.
Put it on air.
Words out of your mouth.
Out of your mouth.
Because
they are
words
on marble.
On marble.
Words on marble.
Only on 99.3
Nigeria Info.
Nigeria Info.
You didn't think we'd let it go unnoticed, did you?
Words on marble.
Only on 99.3
Nigeria Info.
You said it.
We heard it.
Words on marble.
Words on marble.
Watch what you say.
If there is a law that make it mandatory for you to open your mouth, which means your record is not hidden. You know, we always call our record a public record. But when there is a law that now says you must open it anytime somebody is asking for it, then you must keep a proper record. You must keep a record that will be very clean. And that is a step in the right direction. I was telling someone, I said, come, it's also easy to steal government money. The way people are saying, you know, if you are not careful, you will not know when you say you have bought a biro for 10,000.
That was the Deputy Speaker, Lagos State House of Assembly, Kolaole Taiwo.
Words on marble.
Watch what you say.
It's very, very annoying for somebody to go to ATM to withdraw money. When you get there, you put your card, you withdraw money once, 65 naira gone. Like you want to withdraw 100,000 or 50 naira, they will minus 65 naira. Another one, 65 naira. If you have like 60,000 naira, you will see that you can't be able to withdraw 60,000 naira again. Bank already minus like 1,000 something from your account.
Automated teller machines were introduced to the Nigerian banking sector in the late 80s. The National Cash Register, NCR, installed an ATM for the defunct Society General Bank in 1987. One of the first generation banks, First Bank, installed a through-the-wall ATM in 1991 named First Cash. This was a year after the Society General, SGBN, installed its Cash Point 24 in 1990. Decades later, the ATM has become an essential part of banking and transactions in Nigeria. In 2016, 12 banks deployed 12,621 automated teller machines across the country. ATM card charges, ATM card maintenance fees, ATM withdrawal limits, ATM withdrawal charges are all regular terms coming up for conversation among bank customers. There have been arguments about how much banks should charge for withdrawals from ATMs. Just years ago, ATMs were dispensing as much as 40,000 naira per withdrawal. We, however, noticed that this amount, which reduced to 20,000 naira and 15,000 naira in some cases, has further been reduced to 10,000 naira per withdrawal at many ATMs across Nigeria. In a bid to effect the cashless policy, the CBN on its website claims limits on ATM transactions is not aimed at eliminating, but rather to reduce the amount of physical cash in circulation and encourage more electronic-based transactions. Associate Professor of Economics, University of Lagos, Dele Balogun, believes that the reduction in amounts to be withdrawn per transaction would help achieve the aim of the central bank to promote a cashless society.
What do you need money for? To pay for goods and services. They tell you, oh, somebody went to one particular ATM, withdrew up to 100,000, and then he's entering the bus, somebody's following him and taking it from him. You don't want to predispose people to such instances. If the central bank is trying to do and say, tell this bank that as much as possible, reduce cash transactions. To reduce cash transactions also means you put some stumbling block in the ability of people to withdraw cash. So the central bank is in the middle. The banks don't just act independently. The central bank is the banker's bank, and they provide rules as to how banks operate. So it's a policy in the right direction. And I don't see CBN enforcing a situation whereby it would increase the cash withdrawal limits.
But Nigerians don't seem to think so. We took the opinions of bank customers across Lagos, especially in markets where there is a high volume of transactions.
It's affecting us because instead of me to take 50,000 once or 20,000 once, I have to take it two times or three times. And they'll be taking the same percentage of that 52 naira. Before, I used to withdraw 40,000 once, but now it's not possible. It's 10,000 you can withdraw.
Even if they want to charge, it should not be more than 20 naira. That 65 naira is too much. Sometimes if I want to withdraw, I will have to go to my bank. The way they will scatter that money for me.
They are trying to make something for themselves by getting more out of us.
I need 20,000 naira. Now withdraw 10,000, which is twice, and they are going to withdraw them 65 times 2. It should be 100 and something. It affects a lot.
My customer bought clothes from me, so I gave her my account number. So the woman paid 30,000 naira. When I closed it, I wanted to collect the more, so I collect 20, press 10,000, I said no. So when I check the balance, I realized that 9,000 something that here.
They are collecting like 100,000 naira. That is almost 10 times. And they'll be charging 65 naira per charging. Times 10, that's how much.
Central bank should try and advise the mini bank that they should try and remove the 65 naira.
We can rant for all we care, but it's just that we have a system whereby customers are not protected. Even if I want to complain, who would I complain to? 65 naira for what? You still pay 65 naira, they'll still charge you COT for that transaction at the end of the day. So we have been ripped off.
Last time I actually checked my account, they actually billed me 1,100 and something naira for just maintenance. It's too much.
There is this another 65 naira that they used to do every month ending for ATM maintenance. I went to collect the ATM, and with my ATM, I am removing money for ATM maintenance. Are you the one maintaining my ATM for me? So that thing is just a scam. We don't understand what TBN governor is doing about that. So let them help us to find something to do about.
Let the government interfere. I remember during the Sanusi regime, Sanusi said the other time that they should not be charging us again and they scrap it. But now, I don't know why they did not get back again. If they remove this now from 1 million people, you know how much is that kind of money?
I spoke to the head personnel and business banking operations of Stanbic IBTC Bank, Mr. Adekunle Akinbowale, who explained that the aim of reducing withdrawals to 10,000 naira per transaction at some ATM centers was not to rip off customers, but to protect the machines from constant breakdown.
For Stanbic, if a new ATM is designed today and you test it for functionality,
you will be able to hold as much as 40. But over time, experience has shown that the more that an ATM pick and dispense, and depending on the quality of the notes, the more the velocity in which the machine will be running. So if you take 20 notes at a time, the machine is not going to do as much velocity as if it takes 40 or 30. So over time, because of one, the quality of notes in circulation, which unfortunately is not getting better. The money are dirty, they have changed hands, and they are not as quality as if you have mint or very clean notes. So the machine do more effort in dispensing those things and in weakening those levers around the ATM. And most of the vendors will advise that it's because it's taking the maximum. So if you reduce it a bit, it could be better. And the number of times that ATM also break down due to maybe machine malfunctioning or those cash quality and everything also speaks to the availability to customer in terms of serving the customer. The second thing that determines the maximum amount that you can pay is the denomination of the note that you put there. If you have positioned your machine to pay 30 notes and you put 500 naira, so that means that the maximum you can take at once would be 15,000. Whereas if you put 1,000, it means that the maximum you can take at the time would be 30,000. So the availability of higher denomination is also a function. You realize that we have more lower denomination, especially 500 in circulation than 1,000. So a lot of people try to get as much as possible 1,000. But where there are shortages of it and there are volume, there are demand, in order not to make the machine without any cash, people load 500. That automatically bring to half the amount that people can withdraw.
In 2016, the House of Representatives condemned the spurious charges levied on Nigerians on ATM transactions outside their domiciliary banks. This was against the reintroduction of remote announced ATM withdrawal transaction fees, which had been cancelled in 2012. Bank customers had since then paid a 65 naira charge from the third transaction on other banks aside their domiciliary banks, which was to offset the burden on the banks. In October 2018, Senator Gbenga Ashafa of Lagos East Senatorial District raised a motion on the limit of withdrawal to 10,000 naira per transaction, which would force Nigerians to pay more charges on withdrawals. He spoke to me on the motivation for this motion.
We found out that most of those ATM machines, especially the modern ones, which they are all using, was configured in a manner that you can withdraw 40,000 at once. So why have they broken it down to 10,000 or 20,000? It is because they are interested in what they are going to charge per withdrawal. Most banks have deliberately manipulated their ATM machines. These are some of the things that drove me into presenting that motion. The machines have been skilled not to dispense more than 10,000, and in most cases not more than 20,000. The committee headed by Senator Rafiu Ibrahim has already started interaction with the Central Bank, and I'm sure, you know, issues are being raised, stakeholders are being called, they've held several meetings, but we've not seen the resolutions and the way out of this. Whether there's going to be reductions, whether there are going to be payback, whether there are going to be outright cancellation, we don't know right now. So we are waiting now for the report of Senator Rafiu Ibrahim.
How much longer would Nigerians have to wait till there is a resolution from the Senate?
Well, there was a time frame given. The time frame had already expired, and so many things accounted for that. During that period, we had the Christmas break, so the meetings could not continue. But I'm sure, as we are resuming, it will be one of the priority issues that that committee will take up, because I'm in constant conversation and follow-up with Senator Rafiu Ibrahim, who is chairman of that committee.
As the Senate resumes, Nigerians hope that the motion raised will progress to address the numerous complaints on various bank charges in the country. For Nigeria Info, I'm Wemimo Adewuni.
What was that?
What is this? 99.3
Nigeria Info.
99.3 Nigeria Info. We'll be right back.
It is the 2019 general elections live on your number one talk news and sports station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Join us live from our studios and relish blow-by-blow accounts, incisive analysis, live reports, and voting updates, INEC guidelines, candidate participation, and all you need to know. On Saturday and Sunday from 7 a.m. to midnight, we'll bring you up to speed and ensure your dial is locked in. Nigeria Decides 2019 on Saturday and Sunday, 7 a.m. to midnight. It is live on your number one talk news and sports station, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Join us.
Welcome back to your number one talk news and sports station. This is Nigeria Info. In the heart of Lagos, news, talk, and sports. Talk and sports. Only on one dial. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Nigeria Info.
They are doing.